Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly. And joining us this week in the VIP tent are the hosts of the MASH Matters podcast, Colonel Jeff Maxwell and Colonel Ryan Patrick. Hi, guys.
Hey.
Welcome back to the show.
Wow. We've been promoted.
Yes.
We have.
Anyone who's nice enough to come back to the show, I always try and knock you up a rank. I don't know where we're going to be by season 11 or anything.
Wait a minute. This is a family show, isn't it? We were talking about knocking us up.
You weren't kidding, Jeff. You really do start with the A material.
I start with the A material. Absolutely.
Now, I have a question, though. Is this promotion legit, or is this a promotion that came off the mimeograph machine?
Ah, see? Yeah, that nice tie-in. Nice segue.
Thank you.
Yeah. Again, I'm super excited to have you guys back on the show. I love MASH Matters, of course. You guys have been doing some amazing episodes over there, talking to some people that I was like, Shari Sava. Like, that was so amazing. It's so, so cool. And so I am just very, very humbled that you would deign to appear on my little MASH show over here, especially for the second time. So thank you both.
I have not deigned this week at all. So it's really good to be here. Thank you both. We love being here. We had such a good time the first time, and you're a great host, and we think much highly of you. And is that right, Ryan? Did I say it?
you read it just like I scripted it. Yes. Thank you.
Okay. So that's why we're back. My gosh. Yeah. Thank you.
Fair enough. All right. Well, as Ryan indicated, we're here to talk about season 5, episode 4, Lieutenant Radar O'Reilly. Now, when I do these intros, I always generally number the episodes, whatever they were for that season. So this is the fourth episode of season 5. But this is also the 100th episode of MASH.
Hey!
Wow!
Yeah, this is the 100th episode. So I'm assuming, Jeff, that they didn't do anything special for this at the time. They didn't have like a cake or anything like that.
They barely let me on the lot, so I don't know if there was a cake. I was happy to be there for my 8 minutes.
Right? I didn't know whether anybody took notice of the fact that
I don't think there was. I do not remember a cake or any hoopla whatsoever.
Okay, gotcha. All right, they're just getting it done. So the original air date was October 12th, 1976, written by the Dynamite team of Everett Greenbaum and Jim Fritzell, and directed by Alan Rafkin. So, of course, we know Jeff and Ryan's storied history with this show, so let's get right to the plot. The gang ends a late-night poker game when midnight strikes, with Radar winning the last hand. Hawkeye and BJ are upset when they find out that a visiting master sergeant named Woodruff owes them both money and doesn't have the money to pay them back. Woodruff, who works in the office that issues promotions, offers up a promotion to either of the doctors instead of the money he owes them. None of them wants to be a major, but BJ suggests, how about Lieutenant Radar O'Reilly? A few days later, during mail call, Radar is stunned when he reads a letter from I Corps to Colonel Potter announcing his own promotion. Colonel Potter beams with pride, and Klinger offers up Radar his first genuine salute. Now that he's an officer, it takes a lot of the 477 to adjust. Frank is horrified, Margaret is frustrated, and Radar's friends Zale and Igor treat him like he's the enemy. When Margaret gives Radar some work to get done, his initial response is to do it himself. Margaret then informs him that he is now commissioned. That means he must delegate. But when he asks Zale and Igor to do the work he would normally do, they blow him off. Things go downhill when Radar tries to teach Klinger to assume his company clerk duties, but finds Klinger disinterested. It gets even worse. The nurse that has shown some ardent romantic interest in Radar when he was a corporal now has no interest since he's no longer forbidden fruit. Radar leaves horribly confused. All the change ends up making Radar so miserable, he's a man without two worlds, that he comes to visit Hawkeye and BJ feeling depressed. Hawkeye and BJ, realizing their joke has backfired on poor Radar, offer to try and get him busted back down to corporal. Radar gleefully accepts the demotion. Now that he's a corporal again, the nurse is back to flirting with him, and he's pals again with Klinger, Zale, and Igor, who wait for him outside the nurse's tent to bust his chops, just like they used to do. All right, so Jeff, part of the reason I always wanted you guys back for season 5.
That actually almost brought tears to my eyes. Really. I'm telling you.
All my grammatical errors? Was that the problem?
No. Hearing the story again, it just got me.
It's a wonderful script. Again, Everett Greenbaum and Jim Fritzell, man. You can't, you know.
Can you beat him? Well, what? No. The Andy Griffith Show. Come on. That's
yeah, those they, guys are, you know, just the best, these two. But so you have a lot to do in this one for Igor. And that was one of the reasons why I wanted to specifically talk about this one. So before we get into like the details of the given scenes, I mean, What are your memories of working on this episode?
I'm sorry. I have no memories whatsoever about working on the episode. What I did, however, because Ryan Patrick is very diligent, and he said, Jeff, you got to look at the show. You're not going to do it. You read the look at it, please. So
that's a great Ryan Patrick, by the way.
Is that how I sound? Is that really how I sound?
That's wow. Over my headphones, anyway.
People sound different in their head than what they hear in the recording.
I guess so. Wow. Very
politely reminded me to try and watch the episode, which I did, and I enjoyed it. I have to say, one of the things that knocked me out, and I started laughing out loud, which I normally don't do other than being on the MASH Matters podcast and this podcast, was when Loretta Swit started using the bullwhip. I didn't expect it. I didn't remember it. And Radar brings the thing in, hands her the package. Oh, Donald, send me that. And she looked at it, and I thought it was going to be, you know, lingerie or something. And she pulls this thing out. And her face, when she looked into the camera, and started whipping that thing around. Boy, was that an actor's commitment. There was no hesitation about what she was going to do. It just was one of the funniest things I'd ever seen her do. So that's, yeah. So it's not a memory, but it was a memory of what I saw when I watched the episode.
Loretta could definitely get some volume with her lungs when she would yell.
Oh, mercy. Man. Yes. Whoa,
it's like rattling the rafters. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But memories specifically about the episode, it's really hard. It was a few years ago.
Oh, of course.
You know, I was probably high anyway. So what?
So when you see yourself in certain episodes, like this one, because again, you have kind of more to do than Igor would typically get to do, and we get to see you in a different context, is that you're not at the mess table. You know, you're actually does it spark a memory, or do you just, or is it almost like you're disassociating? Like, oh yeah, that I know that's me. I don't remember it, but there I am right there.
Well, I do remember laying in the
supply shed or whatever it is.
Supply tent or whatever that thing was. I do remember laying down and trying to get comfortable. And I really was trying to get comfortable because I was not very comfortable lying there. So when we were sleeping there, I was trying to figure out a way so I could feel comfortable trying to sleep so that it would seem somewhat real when the Radar came in and did what he did. So I kind of remember that. The other scenes, though, I don't. I really don't. And I'm sorry to say that it was a real pleasure to watch them because I don't remember them. So they were a real surprise. And when you say, yeah, Igor was doing something that he normally wouldn't be doing, I did see that, especially when they woke him up he was laying there and Houlihan comes on, get up, what are you doing? And he kind of lies to Radar about, well, hey guys, I wasn't asleep. Well, of course he was asleep. He was asleep. So he not only lied, but he was also sort of aggressive with his buddy Radar, which he would normally not do. You know, he wasn't doing that behind the steam table, certainly lying or being aggressive. So that was kind of an interesting thing to see of Igor's personality coming out. Plus, my hair looked really good. So I was very happy with that.
One of the things I kind of like about this episode, and we'll get into it when we go through the scenes, is that like you get this sense that like, I mean, we know that Radar, being an enlisted man, kind of lives in two worlds because he's buddies with the enlisted people because that's who he is. But he, by the nature of his job, he interacts with the officers and they treat him as such. He gets to sit in all the meetings because of who he is. But I love that you feel like there is a whole other MASH show going on about the enlisted characters that we never see. You know, that like Radar, Zale, Klinger, Igor, they have their own little world that for the most part, the viewers never get to see because we're focused on the doctors. But it really, you guys really have, especially at the end scene, and we'll talk about it again when we get to it. But when you all start razzing him about whether he scored with the nurse or not, it really does feel like, oh, there could have been a whole separate MASH sub show of just the enlisted guys doing enlisty stuff at the 477 that the officers have kind of no familiarity with because they're off doing other things.
Where were you when we were shooting this? I think that would have been a really good suggestion in the suggestion box, Rob.
I was like five, you know. I don't know. Well,
we could try it now. Yeah, I think that's true. I agree. There was a whole, but it was like a, you know, the wonderful thing about MASH was that it was kind of a family. And so all of that, all those personalities were real. And when we were hanging out and doing the show and doing this process, you really felt the camaraderie with each other. And so I think it was very, very easy to go into all those characters and to do all those, you know, all the enlisted people, and they had their own world and they had their own conversations. And kind of on the set, we did, you know, there were certain people who would hang out with various people at various times and create those relationships. And so the relationships were very real and a lot of fun to do. So, yeah, I agree. I think it could have been a show. Please, I'm going to write it down, as a matter of fact. Just say, I'm going to suggest it to somebody.
I mean, Disney Plus needs content, you know?
They're running out. So,
you know, I think I think MASH could be one of the little chiclets on the when you go to Disney Plus. It's got Star Wars, National Geographic, Marvel. MASH,
yeah,
you know,
Snow White, Smoke, yeah. You know,
the MASH cares? Cinematic universe.
Exactly.
Yes.
Totally. You totally do it. So, all right. So, so the opening scene of the show, as I described in the plot synopsis, where we're seeing the card game. Now, Ryan, I think as a diehard MASH viewer, you probably have the same. At a certain point, once you've seen these episodes enough times, you start to pick up the kind of the shorthand that the show uses. And then what I mean by that is, anytime there's a poker game and we have our regulars and then there's one guy we've never met before, yes. We know he's going to be the guy that drives the plot. That's always the way it works.
And you never see him again.
Never see him again.
Never returns. Yeah, I know. It's very interesting. These characters that come in, and not just this episode, but throughout MASH, you always see these one-shot characters who everybody's very familiar with. It's like they've been there the whole time. And yet you see them for one episode, they come in, they do something, and you know, then there is a resolution, and then they're gone. You just never see them again. And then until another one shows up, it's like this revolving door of these surprise people that we don't know, but they certainly do.
Yep. It's kind of like when you watch Hanna-Barbera cartoons in the old days where, like, the characters are walking by a background, and the background is painted, except for that lamp, which is whiter than the rest of the background. You're like, that lamp's going to move.
Yeah.
And bang, there it is. It moves because that's the animated piece.
It's true. Yeah.
So, you know, you're going through, you're watching, we've got Klinger, we've got BJ, we've got Radar, Hawkeye, Father McKay, and then Sergeant Woodruff. And you're like, well, who the hell is Sergeant Woodruff? So, okay. Now, in this case, he's played by actor Sandy Kenyon. He had a lot of TV credits. He was on Knott's Landing, Barnaby Jones, Mannix, Hogan's Heroes. He passed away in 2010. But again, he is he's going to drive this plot. And
what's interesting about Sandy Kenyon is I was looking through his bio, and I saw that he was on Hogan's Heroes. He played, he made five appearances on Hogan's Heroes playing five different characters.
Wow.
He never returned as the same character. And one of those episodes of Hogan's Heroes was directed by Gene Reynolds. So I'm assuming that's the connection to MASH, that's what led to his guest appearance on MASH.
That would make sense. Sure. You know, I mean, he would put Gene Reynolds would have it in his memory of like, oh yeah, that guy can do that. I had to wonder, once you've made five appearances on a show, do you not just say, you know, guys, can I just play the same guy that I played last time? Like, why do I?
Right. Well, you know, MASH would do that, though. They would bring back the same actors. You'd have, you know, like Michael O'Keefe coming back and playing two completely different people. I mean, it happened a lot throughout MASH, but it didn't happen five times. I will say that.
Yeah, that seems like a lot, you know, five appearances. Yeah. And Hogan's Heroes wasn't even on that long, right? It was on like four or five years. So it's like every year he's coming back as somebody else. So I do love this. First of all, the poker game. I could watch the guys play poker all day. Like if they had decided to be like you know, like the Hawkeye episode where it was all just Hawkeye. If they had decided to do one episode of MASH that was just a poker game for all 23 minutes, I could have watched that. I find it so enjoyable to watch them just be quippy with one another. And I read that, I remember Ken Levine talked about it on his blog where he said nobody liked shooting poker games because you had to keep track of the continuity of the game. Yeah. You know, you had to be like, well, wait, this guy's got these cards, whatever. So they had to kind of like fudge it a little. You weren't really paying attention about how much he's got what hand.
And it's hard. I just recently did a theater production of The Odd Couple, and that show revolves around a poker game. And it is really hard to try to play fake poker while you're also trying to act and everybody stay in it and do the betting correctly and make sure that you're drawing the right amount of cards. It's really, really not easy to do when you're trying to focus on lines and driving a plot forward. So I understand that. Kudos to them for trying.
Yeah, it makes sense. But again, it's just they're such easy formality watching them do this that it's really, really enjoyable. And so in this scene, we get this moment where Radar has to end the game because he's like, look, it's dawn and I have to go. He goes to his list of, I got to polish Colonel Potter's, I got to do these forms, I got to polish, I got to get Sophie some oats. Mm-hmm. And I love that it's Woodruff who's like, you know, I hate a guy who wins and runs out. And then Hawkeye and BJ are the ones who defend him and say, hey, look, you know, if Radar says he's got to leave, he means it. And then Hawkeye has that great line and he says, without Radar, the 477 would be a license plate. Yeah. And I love that. I love that they kind of, that Woodruff, being a visiting staff sergeant, you know, is kind of like, doesn't really understand what's going on. And I love that they defend him, that they're like, hey, you know, he's not lying, not knock it off. I love that a lot. And then in the following scene where Woodruff says he doesn't have the money to pay BJ back, and they go, well, you should have gotten out of the game. And he's like, well, I have other obligations. I play poker at HQ as well. And Hawkeye's like, wait a minute, you owe me 35 from last week. And I love it when they basically say, you know, get out. And they were like, you know, you can't come back. And Hawkeye says, forget it. You stiffed us twice. I love that him and BJ are already that much of a bunch of, they're both pals, that he is kind of glomming his debt in with BJ's together. I just think that's a really touching little thing. Like, no, you stiffed us both. I think it's very sweet.
And Hawkeye and BJ have a knack for playing with officers from my corps who can't cover their gambling debts too. That's how, you know, in a future episode, that's how they ended up with the howitzer gun.
No, that's right. Yeah.
You know, because he couldn't cover his gambling debts. So by my calculations, Woodruff was out 85 from this game and he owed BJ 35 from the previous week. So that's $120, and $120 in 1952 is worth $1,273 today.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money to lose in a poker game and then stiff them with. Yeah. So I understand their anger.
Yeah. That's right. That's a lot of lot of money. That'd be really good. And so of course it is BJ who comes up with the idea of Lieutenant Radar O'Reilly once Woodruff says, I can promote either one of you. Now, it's so funny that neither Hawkeye or BJ want to be majors. I'm guessing because maybe they figured it would come with additional responsibilities or something. But it's kind of funny. In the old days, in the days of Henry, they would have jumped at that because then they could have used that as leverage against Frank and Hot Lips. But now things are better and Frank is a little detoothed. a bit under Colonel Potter, so they don't need that, and that's a big change. Again, just, you know, not that long ago they would have been like, yeah, let's both be majors, this would be great.
Yeah. This whole plot line though of Lieutenant Radar O'Reilly coming off a mimeograph machine, that is, this promotion by mimeograph is such a far-fetched concept. How does that even work? How does Radar not go get thrown in jail for impersonating an officer because he gets promoted off a mimeograph machine? How does that work?
Well, it's television. It's television.
Oh, wait. This isn't real life?
No, it's not real life. It was just a fantasy, just a TV show. I'm sorry.
Jeff, you're not real?
No, I am not real. So
you're played by an actor.
I am played by an actor at this very moment, as a matter of fact, actually. So
Jeff is very sophisticated AI. That's what's going on. He's a
thank you.
Computer that can respond to any sort of input that you put it into. It's really amazing. So, but yeah, I mean, yeah, always in television, like people can get promoted. Like there's no chain of authority or anything. Like it's just, oh, Woodruff just typed it up and sent it in and somehow.
So why isn't Woodruff a freaking major or, you know, a lieutenant colonel?
Yeah.
A staff sergeant. Why is he not promoting himself through the mimeograph machine?
For those of you listening too young to know what we're talking about, anybody, you guys want to explain what a mimeograph machine even is?
I remember it from school. And it was basically the precursor to a Xerox machine. It was a big machine that had a tube that had ink on it, and it would just basically run the copies. And the copies were this kind of blurry purple ink.
Yep.
And it always had a certain odor too. There was a there was a smell of a mimeograph. You know, as soon as you got a fresh copy off a mimeograph machine. It had a certain pleasant odor to it as well. So
didn't it have a specific paper too? Wasn't there a mimeograph paper for some reason? I remember there was some kind of real flimsy.
I'm sure there was.
Yes.
Yeah.
Strange paper. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
I'm surprised you know that, Jeff, since you're only 26.
That's true. Well, I have record. I have a book here that I look up when we're talking. And I
that. Make reference for the olds.
And a mimeograph machine, that's what Klinger uses to make his newspaper later in the episode, isn't
that's
it?
That's right, yes.
Yeah, okay.
that's a great episode. So yeah. So after Radar delivers a bottle of aftershave for Frank, which Frank yells at him, and he makes him drop it, and it shatters. And so we're seeing he's putting his through his paces. Then we get to the scene that Jeff just mentioned where Radar goes into Margaret's tent, and she pulls out the whip. And man, you know, Loretta Swit is really whipping that thing around.
Yes.
And like, you have to be like trained to do that. Like you could really hurt somebody if you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah. She's a little too good at that whip. If you ask me, a little too good. I think that maybe Loretta had some, I'm not insinuating anything, but I'm just saying that she looked very comfortable with that whip.
Didn't she? She was so committed to that moment and very comfortable. It was kind of creepy.
Yeah.
They did hint in other episodes that that Margaret was into some leather type stuff. They definitely did suggest that.
Yes. Yeah. So. Also, in this scene, I love the running joke throughout the series of Radar calling Margaret sir. It just always makes me laugh. Whenever he calls her sir, I don't know why.
Sir, ma'am, sir.
Yeah,
he's always that.
Yes, yeah.
He's so flustered. Yes. I've had people in my life that I'm so flustered around that I start stuttering.
Yeah. We all do.
So, yeah, we love that kind of thing. Father Mulcahy gets a little metal box of Ritz crackers in the mail, which I don't know. Were Ritz crackers that hard to get at a military unit? I don't know. Maybe they were. Maybe they were. Yeah. Maybe they for some reason got cheaper ones or something. And then Radar accidentally pulls out a bra that got into his satchel when he was visiting Margaret. Now this scene was always cut in syndication. I never saw that scene until I got the DVDs. Again, the syndicators had to cut things out.
Which is kind of insult to injury because Mulcahy has very little to do in this episode. So, you know, he has the poker scene at the beginning and then this episode, and then they cut one of those scenes for syndication.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess the syndicators is kind of like, well, we don't really need this. I mean, again, I love the idea that there are, in any given point in history, something like, 35 different versions of any given episode of MASH because it was cut differently by every syndicator. So you've got some guy in Detroit making editorial decisions.
Yeah.
You know.
I know. It's crazy.
It's crazy. And they all, I mean, did they all exist somewhere? Are they all in a file? I mean, you know, probably not. They probably just threw them out at a certain point. But
yeah.
I would love to see those kinds of things. So then Radar goes to visit the nurse's tent, and there's a nurse waiting for him. Now, this nurse is played by Lynn Marie Stewart. This is her third of five MASHes. She is most famous for playing Miss Yvonne from Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Yeah.
That is like her big credit. And there she is. And she really likes Radar because I guess, again, she's into the sort of forbidden fruit nature of it, is that nurses are not, or officers are not supposed to be fraternizing with enlisted.
Yeah. Yeah. And what? Where did that come from? I mean, you know, that's suddenly a new, you know, just like the characters that come out of nowhere, all of a sudden they're like these, you know, these untold, these unspoken rules of MASH where they can't fraternize together. I don't get that. Yeah. Why does she have her own tent? Here we go again with,
she does,
you know,
seem to have her own tent.
She has her own tent. And but in the next episode in the series is the nurses.
The nurses,
where it seems like there's 17 nurses living together in a tent.
They're living in a submarine, yeah.
Lieutenant Baker has her own tent. I don't know what she's what game she's playing, man, but she's winning.
Maybe she's new, you know.
Maybe
give the new people a chance to get acclimated. So then Radar then delivers the mail to Colonel Potter, who is getting a haircut from Klinger. I mean, there had to be a barber at the 477th, right? I mean, in real life, how would everybody keep their hair trim?
Why Klinger? Why the hairiest guy in camp? Why is he cutting hair?
Maybe Potter's entrusting him, you know, but I mean, there had to be, right?
Well, you know, there are no orthodontists in the army. Maybe there aren't any.
I'm seeing a theme here.
I'm just saying, you said, you ask a good question. Why him? Why aren't there any barbers, for God's sake? Well, there are no orthodontists, so maybe they aren't. I'm just throwing it out. I don't know.
How did people in a war unit survive without dentists?
Well, they had dentists, but orthodonture. Well, a dentist, you know, drills and takes cavities and fixes teeth like that. But an orthodontist straightens your teeth. So if you have a buck teeth or whatever, an underbite, an orthodontist puts the braces on and the real wired up stuff to straighten your teeth and give you a real pretty smile. And that's what an orthodontist. But the Army doesn't have orthodontists in it. No, nope.
I know that.
I know it for certain. I know it for certain.
Huh. Okay. I will learn.
You've heard it
new.
Here. You've heard it here on this podcast.
Okay. This is fascinating.
I love it. This is great. Yeah.
This is why there wasn't another show with all the enlisted men, because we would talk about things like this.
We just sit around talking about, you know, why don't we have this? Why don't we have that?
We don't have barbers. We don't have orthodontists. Then you go to a commercial and you go, I don't think so. I mean, let's change the channel. Why we didn't get any shows.
So Radar gets the promote. He reads the announcement.
How am I doing, Rob? What do you say? I mean, just give me a 1 to 10. I mean, just, is it okay or is it?
Oh, we're like an 11, Jeff. We're good. No,
oh,
we're good.
All right.
No, it's all good. It's all good. Thank you. So Radar delivers the news and he reads his own promotion. And I love the way Gary Berghoff does it, where he goes, you know, MASH 477, blah, blah, and he's just reading it pro forma. And then he goes, right, regarding the
yes.
Because he's obviously getting to the words of their name. And Potter just goes along with it. And he has this great anecdote where he says, crazy things happen in war. A friend of mine was a plumber one day in the charge of the Panama Canal the next.
And you believe it. And you believe it.
You totally believe it. Again, yes. Another great instance from the young Sherman Potter Chronicles. You know, like his life before MASH.
You know, I read somewhere that the ranks in the Army during the Korean War were a little different. So you had private, then private first class, then corporal, sergeant, staff sergeant, sergeant first class, master sergeant, sergeant major, second lieutenant, first lieutenant, and then it goes on to captain, major, lieutenant colonel, and so forth. So Radar's promotion, actually, he skipped like 6 ranks. to get there, it wasn't just a little bump up. It was, you know, do not pass go, do not collect $100 kind of a thing. He went around the entire board. I mean, it was crazy.
I didn't know that. I really always thought it was just a couple. Oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, yeah, Woodruff really overdid it.
I think so. Yeah.
It really did. So then Colonel Potter runs across Hawkeye and BJ, mentions what's going on. BJ and Potter, PJ and Hawkeye, of course, have to pretend that they have no idea what's going on. Mm-hmm. And I love this scene in the Radar's office because, again, basically at this point, the Hawkeye and BJ weren't pulling scams on Potter the way Hawkeye and Trapper did on Henry. Mm-hmm. So they were always more honest with him, but here they have to just BS their way through it. And yeah. They're pretending like, oh, we didn't know that. And then, of course, Hawkeye pulls out the canard of, maybe Colonel Blake put him in for it. Yeah, and it mm-hmm. just took time. Just like, okay.
Right, yeah.
You know, and like they were always much more honest with Colonel Potter. But in this one, and then actually this will happen again in the very next episode, in the nurses, this is kind of more Hawkeye Trapper material, and I don't mean that in a bad way, that they're having to kind of, you know, bullshit their way through with Colonel Potter,
yeah.
which they generally really didn't do. And it's funny watching Alan Alda and Mike Farrell seemingly ad-lib. Now, we mm-hmm. know that was not a thing, Jeff, right? You did not ad-lib on the show.
You did not ad-lib, no.
Right.
No. Right. Yeah, that little repartee they had was really sweet, wasn't it? That was really fun, yeah. The rhythm that the two had established and just the timing that they had. It was really, really fun to watch.
I love that Potter asks Hawkeye questions, and then Hawkeye looks to BJ for the answer. You know,
yeah. Right. Yeah,
exactly. My mother was in the army. The USO, yeah. What? And he looks to BJ. BJ just shakes his head and goes, jelly donuts. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay. And then, of course, Potter can't figure out how to operate the radio, and mm-hmm. He says, and then BJ has the great line, only two people can work that thing, radar and Sergeant Marconi.
Yeah.
And then BJ looks at his watch and he goes, yeah, you'll never get him here. Even at a young age, I knew that I didn't know who Marconi was, but I knew mm-hmm. that was a name in the same league with Edison. And so yes. I got the joke. I was like, okay, that's somebody from history that has yeah. some connection to electronics. And they just pulled that name out of their butt, basically.
Yeah, he's the one who basically invented wireless communication. You know, he was the guy who invented radio.
We have him to thank then for us.
Yes, exactly. You know, and I worked in radio for many years, and I know that like the national awards that are handed out to radio stations are called the Marconi Awards. So I knew that there was a connection there, and I knew that there was a MASH connection there the first time I saw that name.
That's great. That's great. So then we get the phone call to Sergeant Woodruff, and they have the big I-Corps logo. But by the way, as a graphic designer, I really like the I-Corps logo of just the black with the white circle. It's very distinctive. I think it's really cool. And he's sitting in this office, and I love it. He's like, let me look it up. And he just does the flump, 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 flump with the papers
yeah.
kind of thing. Now, Jeff, when you were there, like, when they had to do like these special sets, did they just like build something, wheel it kind of in front of all the other sets and then just shoot it?
No, they would kind of use what was there and sort of repurpose it, basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, they wouldn't.
So there's probably a wall from another set that they just
put it could
the
have I-Corps
logo on and put them
yeah,
in the desk.
They just used somebody's office and redecorated it and said, here, this is the thing now.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. I love all that stuff.
It was pretty cool the way they would do the production, and they had that down so beautifully that, you know, you didn't notice that. I mean, you don't know it. You say, it seems like a whole different place or different location, but it wasn't. It was, you know, 10 feet away from the swamp.
How many stages did you guys have, not at location, but on the lot? Like, was it like three standing sets? Was it five? Like, how did that work?
It was one stage, stage 9, and everything was on stage 9. Everything.
Really?
Yep. Everything. Everyone. I think I remember maybe, I don't know, 4 times in 11 years I was there 9. So 4 times in 9 years, at least that I knew of, that they went to a different stage to set up something else. But it had to have been a very big thing that they had to do that maybe had been, you know, needed to be shot outside, but they couldn't do it. So they had to redo it and put it on a different stage because there was just no room on stage 9. But everything that you see on that show was always shot on stage 9.
So like, when you're on stage 9 and like the swamp set is there mm-hmm. and Colonel Potter's office presumably is there and the OR, are they all, they're all standing sets all the time and they're all like 2 feet away from each other or
yes.
were things, oh, okay. That's how it worked. Okay.
They're all standing sets. And it was kind of laid out like it was, like you saw it. So mm-hmm. the swamp was kind of in the middle, and behind it was Potter's office. To the right of that were all of the tents for Houlihan and everybody else, and that nurse that got her own tent.
Right.
Now, behind the swamp, if you were standing in the front of the – well, you actually saw the mess tent. So if you were the mess tent was, 15 feet away from the swamp, and inside that mess tent – if you walk in that door, was the steam table and all the tables that everybody sat in. So it was kind of real, which was very helpful to make you feel like you were really in a different world. I used to love just kind of hanging out, wandering around, looking at everything, because I thought it was really well done set. There were problems. There were rats and mice, and it smelled kind of funny. But I dug it. I thought it was really cool that it.
You method actors, you.
Yeah.
We actually got fleas just so we could really.
I got bubonic plague actually, so I could feel. But it was really fun. It was a cool set. But everything you saw was basically on stage, and including the OR. The OR was like behind the mess tent. So if you walked into the door of the mess tent and looked straight ahead, you'd see the steam table. And 25 feet behind the steam table was the OR set. And it was in and of itself. So right in the middle of it were all of the tables and all the operating equipment. To the right of that was the sink, and to the left of that was that little storage area or that little office or outside of the OR that you saw people sitting in and so forth. So it was, what you see is what you get when you watch that show. It looked like that in Stage 9.
Wow. Oh, that's amazing. Just fast. Fun. Find that stuff so fascinating. Radar has been promoted. He's in his new uniform. He's in his finest dress uniform. And we go through this series of kind of Abbott Costello sort of gags where he's walking through the compound and all of a sudden everybody is saluting him. And he's kind of like, flustered because he's not used to it. And, the salutes he is getting are like military high grade. I mean, they're not just these little casual. The people are like, wha-bam, that kind of thing. Like they're really, really, whoever the extras are that are doing this, they are really selling it. Cause man, they are like, they're treating Radar like he is MacArthur.
and since when does everybody salute at the 4077?
I never saw one. Never.
Nobody ever never salutes. And then all of a sudden everybody's saluting Radar. Everyone.
Maybe they don't recognize him. Maybe they think he's a visiting, or something. I don't know. I mean,
it's true. He's out of uniform. That's true. Yeah. By wearing a uniform. Yeah.
Yeah. So Radar then shows up and into the swamp, and Hawkeye does the classic salute, which is basically just waves. He does that little wave with his hand. He just kind of like, oh, hello. And they're pretending that they don't see what's going on. They're doing all this joke about, you're letting your sideburns grow. There you have a hickey, and then they finally do. And the BJ doing his best be a Hawkeye. Radar is a second lieutenant. Just come on, guys. And I love the fact that they don't ask Radar how it happened. Like they just accepted. It doesn't. Radar doesn't say, you guys want to hear how it happened? Like they just go along with it. Like,
okay. Well, Radar doesn't know how it happened.
Yeah, I guess so.
My question is, why is Radar wearing a medical insignia on his collar?
Does he have one?
Yes. He has a medical insignia on his collar. And he's not a doctor. He wasn't promoted to surgeon. So not only is he
lying about being an officer, he's also lying about being a doctor. So
yes.
Really, a big problem. I love, again, it's the tribute to these actors that this stuff seems ad-libbed when, as we know, it was not. But I love that they're all kind of riffing on how it happened. And Hawkeye goes, or BJ goes, oh, it was in the cards. And Hawkeye kind of goes like, yeah, he's sort of delighted at BJ's wordplay, which is, and again, the way Alda does it, again, big shock that Alan Alda, great actor, but the reaction feels like he's just hearing it. Like he didn't know that was the line coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, that's why he got the big bucks.
There you go. So then Frank shows up, and of course, he is beyond insulted that Radar has been promoted to one of his own kind, because as has been established, Frank thinks officers are some sort of superior breed of human that he was destined to be, and he cannot deal with the idea that Radar is anywhere close to him. And I just, I love that Frank is offended on some basic human level that Radar would be promoted to anywhere within striking distance of him.
And yet Radar is probably smarter than him on many levels.
There you go.
Yep. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
So that's the act break. And then we come back and we see Margaret is having similar trouble trying to understand this. And then she talks about, do you have a distant relative who's maybe a general, big brass? And Radar offers, oh, my uncle's a Notre Republic. And and she says, anybody can be a Notre Republic. And then he says, he's also a dance instructor. So he's just
where did that come from? I also, and then I love the Radar asking if he can use the officer's latrine, because evidently that's where they keep the National Geographic.
we don't get too deep into the weeds here. I don't think I would want to touch a magazine that's been left in a latrine.
I'm surprised the pages haven't been used for other things in the latrine.
I just think, latrines are bad enough, let alone, I think I'd bring my own reading material.
You certainly don't want to touch one that only has 6 pages left, because happens.
Grim stuff.
But that aside, why can't you take a National Geographic into the enlisted latrine?
I know, yeah.
Why? Yeah. Is there a rule against that?
Is it like a dentist's office where it's like there's a higher grade? Right. What's in the enlisted? Highlights? I mean, what's in there? National Geographic? Yeah, it doesn't. I mean, Igor dug a lot of latrines, I mean, he might know. But speaking of Igor, we finally get him. We get our hero, Jeff Maxwell. When Radar shows up to the supply shed, and we see that Zale and Igor are hard at work, fully asleep. And I love the little bed that Igor has made for himself. There's a blanket, and there's there's pants he's using as a pillow. Like you said, Jeff, that was not super comfortable, but it looks way more comfortable than sleeping in the chair that Zale is sleeping in.
I think it was. Definitely it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. But it's still not the greatest comfort that I've ever experienced. It wasn't. It was kind of crammed in there. So I worked hard to make it as comfortable as I could.
There you go. Now, can you talk a little bit about working with Johnny Hamer? Because Johnny Hamer didn't last throughout the show. He left after he disappears in the middle of season 8 to ostensibly be replaced by G.W. Bailey as Rizzo, because of the sergeant character. But back when I was doing the show, in the early episodes of the show and going through everybody's history, the first time we get to Johnny Hamer, I go through Johnny Hamer's credits. And Johnny Hamer, in 1 year, over the space of 2 years, was in Annie Hall and Albert Brooks's Real Life, which is one of my favorite movies of all time. I mean, that's just those two movies. That's a hell of a filmography for anybody. So, I mean, true, did you get to talk with him a lot or spend any real time with him?
Well, we hung out a little bit, but, for me, and I say this on our podcast, Mash Matters, for me, it was a job. And so I showed up and I had something to do, and I knew I was going to get paid for doing it. So I did it. I at that point I was pretty much done. You punch in, you punch out. I certainly had a lot of friends on the set. Johnny was a great guy. I remember him being very funny and very fun. He had a great character. I liked him very much, but we weren't best buddies or anything, but he was a very pleasant guy and very fun to work with.
It's such a distinctive voice, that amazing It wasn't like a rasp, but it was kind of like a, I can't even describe really what it was, but it was just very, very distinctive.
A Brooklyn.
Yeah, definitely Brooklyn. Yeah. And again, it just, when I see him show up in Annie Hall and then he shows up in Albert Brooks, I'm like, man, this guy, I'm like, for Woody Allen and Albert Brooks to kind of grab you and put you in their movie. I'm like, they must have really been like, yeah, this is the guy. And he kind of plays a quarter of like kind of cheesy comedian in Annie Hall, but he plays a gynecologist in Albert Brooks' Real Life. And he's really funny in both movies. So, I mean, man, he didn't get a whole lot to do on MASH. He would kind of show up here and there, but, you know, again, it's an amazing filmography. And actually, you do hear his voice in Logan's Run, of all things. And you don't see him, but he's a voice. They go outside like the Forbidden Zone, and you hear a bunch of people. And one of them is Johnny Hamer. And it's only because I've seen MASH so many times that voice immediately jumped out of me. I was like, it's Johnny Hamer. And I looked over the credits, and there he is. So, yeah, he had busy in the 70s.
He had a very powerful personality, similar to Jamie Farr. They both have very powerful kind of energies and personalities. So that was what I remember him very definitely. You know, he's a very powerful guy, and lots of great energy coming off of him.
So, Jeff, I'm just curious, how many times did Zale and Igor sleep together in the supply room?
You know, this is a family show, and I don't think I should get into that personal.
All right, never mind. I'm sorry.
Talking about
that's getting Smash Cast Extra Dark.
Crossed the line. Sorry.
So I love that Radar asks them to do this task, and they both basically say, blow. Zale's going through all that. Does he remember the time I got him an O. Henry bar for the movies? Does he remember when this or that? And they're both just, and you guys are just doing your sob story of like, oh, Radar asks you guys to do one thing, and you both are acting like this is the greatest betrayal that he ever could perpetrate on the two of you. And then, of course, he gets angry and storms out, and then comes back in, and he goes, if you guys could get this done, I'd really appreciate it.
That was funny. He was pretty good. Boy, you know, what a great little actor. I don't mean little. He's a great actor. Yeah, he's a little small, but he's a terrific actor. And he just had some wonderful moments in that show. He really did.
Yeah.
Just so fun to watch him.
So then Radar meets up again with Nurse Baker. And now, of course, she's not interested. She doesn't care because he's a lieutenant. It's no longer got that sizzle to it. And I love the underdog. I used to root for the St. Louis Browns.
Yeah.
I know who that used to be an old football team. I guess they lost a lot. Is that the context?
Well, it's baseball. It's a baseball team.
Yeah. Oh, St. Really?
Louis had, St. Louis had two different baseball teams at the same time. The Cardinals and the Browns. And the Browns were awful. I think the Browns then eventually became the Orioles, if memory serves, when they moved to Baltimore. But the Browns were just, I think they had in their history, they had like, I think only two winning seasons. And in 1939, the St. Louis Browns went 43-111 in their season. Which might be a record. I don't know. But they were really, really bad. Yeah.
All right. Good to know. As I said, I didn't even know that that was baseball.
Yeah.
So then we have Radar training Klinger to take over his job. And man, I could watch these two go after each other all the time. And by the way, there's a little aside, of course, where Colonel Potter comes in and he asks Radar how things are going. And Radar calls him Sherm.
Yeah.
And Klinger goes, he's like, Sherm? He's like, oh, yeah, sure. Officers call each other by their first name all the time. And he's like, what'd you call me? Colonel, sir. Colonel. But, man, this scene of Radar and Klinger going at each other, I mean, this is as great as Berghoff is in this episode. And he is, because this is his episode. Jamie Farr just crushes this scene because he is just digging under Radar's skin. It's like, you know, he can almost see the delight of how much he's making his life harder.
Yeah. For Radar. And he doesn't want to be there either. You know, this is another responsibility that he doesn't want.
Exactly.
And it's foreshadowing too, because eventually that's the role he's going to assume later when Radar leaves.
Yep.
One thing I noticed, and going back to the previous scene when Radar's with Nurse Baker, the PA announcer comes over and says, Lieutenant O'Reilly, please report to Colonel Potter. Radar, get to Colonel Potter. Okay, so, you know, there's always been this mystery about the PA announcer, where the PA announcer is. And, in my mind, the PA announcer speaks through the microphone that is in Radar's office.
Right.
But so you have the announcement saying get to Colonel Potter's office. In the very next scene, Radar is teaching Klinger how to use the microphone, how to use the PA system, because evidently Radar is the only person in camp who knows how to use it, except for this mystery phantom PA announcer who evidently lives in his own little tent somewhere at the corner of the camp and is never in the never in Radar's office. So that confuses me.
It really is a very, when you think about it, it really is a kind of like a Dada kind of joke.
Yeah.
There's a guy in the camp that is there every day and does a lot of the work, but we will never see him and he's never referred to.
Yeah.
I think there's one episode where Radar refers to him. There's one episode where he like talks back to the speaker and says something like, hey, read it the way I told you to read. So there is a human that Radar has interacted with, but we will never see this person. We will never
Maybe Radar is the only person who can hear him. Maybe this is, now we're really going out on the,
There we go.
All right. We need to explore that. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe so. That's another show that we could do from the MASH cinematic universe.
Yes.
Thing. Yeah. Get J.J. Abrams in on that or something. But, so I love Radar teaching, Klinger how to use the thing. He could not be a worse teacher, where he flicks the one light. And he's like, okay, let's review. What does this light mean? Like, he literally just covered it a second ago. And it's like, of course, no wonder Klinger is bored out of his skull. And then he says, let's review. What does the light mean? Tinkerbell's alive? Like, he's absolutely not helping Radar in any way. And it's just, and I love that he's in a green polka dot outfit with like a little kind of fancy hat. Like, he's not even bothering to dress the part or anything like that. And, and poor Radar is trying to take this so seriously. And Klinger's just not having any of it.
No, none. Not at all. Because he doesn't want to do it. He doesn't want to do it.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. So then he blows into the microphone and we see Hawkeye and BJ hearing, obviously, announcements coming in because he's blowing over the, we're the of the PA. And then there's a line coming up here where he has Klinger blow into the microphone. Mm-hmm. And Klinger spits. And Radar's like, no, that's too wet. You'll get it all rusty. And that's when they get that comes with the moment with the whole Sherm. You call the old man Sherm. And then Potter's, what'd you call me? Colonel. So Colonel. And then so he hands the mic back to Klinger. Klinger cannot help himself. He spits on the microphone. Radar admonishes him. And Klinger has a line that I use to this day, where he says, we're Lebanese, we're full of the juices of life. I still use that anytime. I don't even, it's not even in the right context, but I use that with my fiance all the time where I go, I'm Italian, I'm full of the juices of life. I still use that to this day. I don't even think I've told her where it's from.
Yeah, it's perfect. Yeah, love that. I love that line.
Just absolutely fantastic. So then Klinger makes the announcement of the movie, which he ad-libs, and he talks about, again, one of these movies that does not exist. It's another fake movie that the 477th gets, and we get to see Hawkeye and BJ having a little running commentary about the movie that's that's coming.
Two Lizards to Broadway.
We're going to talk about that later. I like how angry Klinger gets, where he's like, get off my back, Lieutenant. And it is kind of amazing that he feels comfortable talking to Radar that way, even though, of course, Radar is a lieutenant now. But he's feeling very comfortable telling Radar to go screw himself.
Yeah, I mean, Radar is still Radar. And even though he has a different rank, he still is a little bit of a pushover. And I think that everybody in camp kind of knows that. And that's why Zael and Igor and Klinger feel like it's okay that they can push back and say no to him. It's really the only officer in camp that they could do that to and get away with it, you know?
So later on at night, we see that Igor should be on sentry duty, but he's asleep. And he has commandeered a young Korean boy, played by the actor Raymond Chow, who was on shows like Police Story and Harry O. And he literally gave the kid his rifle and his helmet to walk around in. Now, I have to ask you, Jeff, did Igor suffer from narcolepsy or something? Like, what's happening? Why is Igor always sleeping?
I think in that episode he did, certainly. I mean, I don't think normally he did, but boy, he was asleep all the time in this one, which is okay with me. I mean, I was pretty much asleep anyway, so I didn't have to act much. Just, you know, showed up, rolled in, laid down, and rolled over. That was it.
Yep.
I
love Radar's response where he wakes Igor up and he says, he's like, you know, there's trouble. And Igor's response is, what, did the kid fall asleep?
Right.
Yeah. Igor's just not good at his job as a sentry. He's just not.
No, he was not good.
Yeah, but who's putting him in charge of that? You know, I mean, let's face it. They should have known better than to give Igor that responsibility.
Yeah, they shouldn't have given him a rifle, certainly.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're good with the ladles, not a rifle. That's a good idea. I love that the little kid demands the password from Margaret, and she just says, oh, shut up. And the kid goes, wrong again. And she grabs the rifle without even thought. She's just, like, totally not intimidated. And I love that the kid talks back to her.
Yeah.
Wrong again. This is great. And so then Igor gets a line after Margaret says, put this man on report. And Igor gets a line that, Jeff, I have to say, this is unfortunate. This scene, this little bit is always cut in syndication. I never saw this till I got the DVDs, where you say, lucky for you, I wasn't asleep. They would have shot you, Fink. And he calls Radar a Fink.
Yeah.
Things are getting heated.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. I at that point, I think, you know, Igor got to show a little bit of humanity rather than just about the creamed weenies. And he was irritated. A real human being a little bit would be irritated, and he was able to show it, which was kind of fun for me. I mean, I didn't get a chance to do that very much in the chow line. So that was fun. And as I say, he lied. You know, he's saying, what was the line? I forget. What was the line he says? They say to him, this is terrible. Somebody say the line.
Scene?
Somebody. Is anybody out there? Hello. Is this on? Hello.
Which scene are you referring to?
The scene we're talking about where he's got the rifle and he's standing there. If I hadn't been what did he say? Fink? What?
He calls Radar a Fink because Radar is like, you're lucky for you, I wasn't asleep.
Lucky for you, I wasn't asleep. Yeah, thank you very much. Sorry about that.
Yeah,
But he was, he's lying. He was asleep.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
So he was lying, and he's also calling his friend a Fink. So he had a little bit of, stuff going on there, which he didn't normally used to be able to exhibit. So,
well, yeah, I mean, Igor is always the one being intimidated.
Yeah.
He never gets to be the one to do the intimidating.
Yep.
And in this case, he does. He knows that this is the one guy in camp that he can push back on.
Yeah.
No matter how many stripes or bars he has on his uniform or hat, he knows that he can push back to Radar, but he's about the only person who in camp he can do that to.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was fun for me to be able to do that. So
cool. It does make me wonder, what jobs did Igor get stuck with when he was in trouble? Because it seems like the jobs you had to do normally were digging latrines, like already kind of bad. What else? Did you go look for landmines? I mean, what other
probably.
You know, I mean, my God. I mean, what else is there for Igor to sink to? I mean, I don't understand.
Clean Sophie's tent.
Clean out the stables or something. You clean out bedpans or something like that.
Nope.
So back in the swamp, there's a little bit of filler here where we're waiting for Radar to show up, where Hawkeye is showing BJ a nudist magazine, and he says, RJ Hardledge has been named Nudist of the Year. Now, that name is so specific. I don't know what it's from, but that had to have been something from real life, because that's not a name you just make up.
Or it's somebody who the writers knew that they wanted to make a nudist. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. That's RJ Hardley.
Yeah. I love BJ's response. Oh, great credentials. It's a great line.
It's an early, when you think about it, like it's a little transgressive in that we have a character on a show it was a TV show that was massively popular, watched by tens of millions of people, and was openly enjoying pornography. Like, that was kind of
yes.
there was a little outre in the 1970s. Like later on, it would become a little more of a Friends. They talked about it all the time. But like, you know, this was a show that aimed presumably at kind of a family audience in some respect. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was on after All in the Family, but still it was like, yeah, there's a character that, and they never apologized for it. Hawkeye's like, yeah, no, I like news magazines. So I was like, okay, all right. I mean, you know, that's the way it is. So Radar comes in and is just really depressed because, like, as I said, he is a man without two worlds. He's not friends with the enlisted, but he doesn't really fit in with the officers because, of course, he's not really an officer. And then they kind of just get out of it by saying, all right, well, we'll just undo it. It'll be fine. And then, of course, Radar never really even asks, how are you going to undo it? You know, like, how is that even going to happen? Yeah. But we trust Hawkeye and BJ to just, we'll handle it.
Yeah. That's always stuck out to me. Radar's demotion. How do they explain that? I mean, you know, because they have to be able to explain it to the entire camp and especially to Colonel Potter.
Yep.
So do they just say it was a clerical error or, you know, because otherwise Hawkeye and BJ have to come clean and say, no, it was us. We did this and we're sorry. And, you know, and get off the hook again. But I don't know how they could have just said, oh, never mind. He's a corporal again. That's always stood out to me. And why did he want to go back to corporal? Why didn't he at least get bumped up, you know, down to a sergeant at the very least?
Exactly.
Get a little more pay, you know, just a little more and have a little higher rank. But he wanted to go back down to corporal. That's where he felt comfortable.
That way, as he says, he can keep up the payment on his mother's electrolysis.
Yeah.
Yeah, that never made any sense to me. I'm like, at least go down to sergeant. You're still an enlisted man, but you're making a little more money. Why would you? But okay, you know, we gotta reset the, you know, put the characters back to position A where they were at the beginning.
Exactly. Yeah. By the way, this scene also features, I believe, the first of two references in MASH to the hair in Frank's Burns mole. I always found it interesting when they would talk about Frank having a hair in his mole.
Now it's funny. MASH couldn't be bothered to keep years straight on the show, but that continuity they kept.
That was canon. Yes. That was the hairy mole was canon. Yes.
No, we have no idea who's president, but Frank's mole, we got to make sure.
Right.
Keeping that consistent. Absolutely. All right. Okay, MASH writers. I see you guys. I do like that Hawkeye and BJ, they never cop to it. But they look at each other at one moment, and you know that they feel bad. This was obviously not meant to be, you know, anything. They were meant to. It was meant to help Radar, and they didn't realize it would backfire. And so they feel a little bad that they you know kind of put him through this, you know. And then they kind of get around with it with the you know, can I do anything for you? And he says, Hawkeye says, you know, any fast girls? And BJ like, you know, any slow ones? Again, they're doing it kind of just to entertain themselves. And I love it that when Radar looks around surreptitiously, Hawkeye and BJ do it too, just to kind of go along with it. Like,
yeah. What's going on? I think it's also sweet that BJ and Hawkeye never really tell Radar that it was them who made this happen. So Radar, the whole time, he left the 4077th. He went back to the States thinking that it was a legitimate promotion, you know, and you know, it's kind of sweet that they didn't say, hey, this was a joke. We wanted to do it to help you and blah, blah, blah. He left there thinking, well, somebody saw something in me to promote me. And that's kind of cool.
I never thought of that, but you're right. Yeah. It is kind of like a nice, like, all right. At one point the Army thought I was officer material. That's kind of nice. Yeah.
Right. Yeah,
that's cool. Oh, I like that. I believe I've seen this episode so many times. I never thought about that. So then the final scene of the show is back in Nurse Baker's solo tent. And she is now, of course, back interested in Radar because he is forbidden fruit again. And he says, you know, she's like, you know, bring combine next time. And he says, well, what happens if you don't get any mail? And she says, wing it, stud. And then he walks out and waiting for him are our enlisted heroes, Klinger in uniform, Zale and Igor, and everything is back to normal. They're razzing him. They're like, how you doing? And he's like, I don't have to say anything. And I'm like, oh, struck out. And the show ends with the four of them just kind of being buddies and chiding Radar for, you know, his imagined, you know, lack of, lack of, you know, skill with the Nurse Baker. And it's a sweet ending. It's a nice kind of thing to see this camaraderie. And like I said at the top of the show, it really does suggest a whole second strata of 477th existence that we never got to see.
Yeah. But yeah. Jeff, you guys seemed a little too eager to know what happened in that tent, if you ask me.
We did seem to be a bit eager, didn't we?
Yeah, it was kind of junior high-ish, actually.
I agree. If we had it to do over, I think we'd have done it a little more subtly.
Yeah, it's almost like you were getting your jollies off of him.
Yeah, 14 years old. What did he see?
Yeah, living vicariously through radar.
Oh, it's definitely got that kind of, 14-year-old kind of thing.
Oh,
absolutely.
Yeah.
I never had those discussions with my friends because I was never near any girls.
Same.
No one was ever worried about asking me how I did. I'll cut that part out. So anyway, it's a terrific show. It's a terrific, funny show. It's a great showcase for Gary Berghoff. And of course, I'm always happy to kind of see the side characters a little more. And it was fun to see Zale and Igor kind of strutting their stuff a little bit, kind of, pushing back on radar. Yeah. And it was nice to see that, again, that Igor is concerned with getting enough rest.
This is his main goal of the 477. Yeah.
Sleep his way rest through the Korean War is best.
Sleep.
It's a terrific, terrific fun show. Yeah. Again, it was written by Fritz Ellen Greenbaum and directed by Alan Rafkin. I mentioned that at the top of the show. This was his first of two mashes that he would direct. He worked on shows like Bob Newhart, Mary Tyler Moore, Murphy Brown. It's Gary Shandling's show, so he had really quite a wonderful career. So I do want to ask you guys, as I did with every episode, do you guys have a favorite line or joke from this episode?
I have several lines that we've already discussed. I love It's in the Cards. I love the We're Full of the Juices of Life. Great credentials. These are lines that have always made me laugh. There's one line that is kind of a subtle line, but it always gets me, is when they're trying, when Potter is trying to work out why he's been promoted, why has Radar been promoted? And he says something about throwing himself on a live grenade. And BJ says, I saw him throw himself on a case of rotten spam. And Hawkeye says, ate the whole thing. I love that. It's so fast. It's so quick. And you can blink and miss that line, but it's always stood out to me and always made me laugh.
And again, it feels like it's an ad lib. It feels like I just thought of it when, of course, it was scripted. But yeah, that whole run between them is they're doing it kind of just great to entertain themselves, really.
Yeah.
Which is really funny. So, Jeff, did you have outside of your lines, of course, I'm sure that was your favorite, was your lines.
Those are my favorite lines, absolutely. Positively. The brilliance that they were delivered with is just stunning. When I said,
the way you said beats me. I don't think I've heard anybody. I don't think Olivier could have done it better.
No, absolutely not. And for me to be able to say, think, wow. I mean, bless you. Bless the writers.
At the end of your takes, did Alan Rafkin stop and say, hey, everybody, let's just pause a moment?
Well, everybody burst out in applause. So
see what we just the rest of you, pay attention to what we just saw here.
And the applause kept, ruining takes. So they had to keep doing it over and over again.
Yeah. Right. Please stop already.
You're embarrassing the rest of us. Embarrassing
me. As I said, my favorite moment from the show is when Loretta cracks that whip. That really... I loved it.
I said you could really hurt somebody with that thing. So she knows how to handle that. My favorite line, we kind of already talked about it a little, is when their radar and Klinger are going over the PA, and Klinger is reading the announcement of the movie One Ticket to Broadway, and he goes through the whole cast, and it's all I think it's all fake actors. I don't think there's anybody actually real in that list. And then he adds, and Teddy the Wonder Lizard, and there's this great pause. For Radar, he literally has to look at the sheet and he has to review it like it's an IMDb profile. And he goes, there's no lizard in there. And BJ and Hawkeye hear all this. And then BJ just goes, there's no lizard in that picture. And then Hawkeye responds with, that was two lizards to Broadway.
Yeah.
Oh, I just love Two Lizards to Broadway. That just I want to see that movie. I absolutely want to see that movie. It's fantastic. So, Well, fellas, I'm always, like I said, I'm always so honored that you would come back to my little humble MASH effort over here. And so I really do appreciate you taking the time to come back on MASHcast. It's always fun talking to you guys.
Okay. But next time we come back, we want to do it as different characters. Can we do that?
All right.
Okay.
Why don't you do it, Jeff? Why don't you do one as Igor?
Give me time to prepare.
Okay, fair enough. Ryan, you can be Colonel Potter or something if you want. If you have a
horse hockey.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Perfect. Absolutely. Right. We'll work that out. So no,
let me see if I can get this. Beats me.
Ha ha. What do you think? You still got it, kid. You still got it.
What a reading.
Still got it. Look, no one listening to this doesn't know where you're from or where they can find you. But just to be polite, I should ask, where could people find you guys out on the internet?
That's a loaded question. Yeah. You can find us at mashmatterspodcast.com. We're on, we're on all the socials too, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Our episodes are uploaded to YouTube too. So you can find us a little bit of everywhere. And we're a bad rash. You can't get rid of us.
Yes, and thank you for having us and asking us to come back. We really enjoy it, and I certainly appreciate all the nice things you said about me. You could have said more, but that's all right. So far, it's been pretty good. And but really, it's a real pleasure to be here, and you're a terrific host and a terrific steward of each individual episode of MASH. So thank you for doing that.
Well, thank you both very much, and I will give you guys public credit. Anyone listening. I know everyone that follows my show enjoyed my talks with Mike Farrell and Jamie Farr, and boy, howdy, did I enjoy those. And they would not have happened without Jeff and Ryan's help. So I got to give you guys credit on air for helping me put that together, because getting to talk to anybody from the show, anybody of the cast, the crew that worked on this show is just beyond my imagination. There's nothing that when I was a kid watching this show, I ever thought would be possible. You know what I mean? Like, wasn't even... It wasn't like a thought that I had as a kid that said, well, that's never going to happen. It just never even occurred to me, you know, that someday you'd say, oh, you know what? Maybe when you get older, you'll get to talk to the people that made this show. I'd be like, what? Yeah, I'm going to be on the moon too, I guess, right? You know what I mean? It wouldn't even make any sense. So the fact that I've had the chance to do this with you, Jeff, and through your generosity, Mike and Jamie and Ken Levine and other people that have been on the show, it's just Loretta. It's just been... just so rewarding. I love doing the show. I would do it even if I didn't get a chance to talk to anybody, but just the fact that I've been able to, you know, express the love I have for the show and how much it means to me to the people that helped make it is just beyond any reward I could have possibly hoped for when I started the show. So again, you guys helped me get to Mike Farrell, and that was just, you know, so thank you both.
Well, you see, so you talked to Mike Farrell. We were better, weren't we? Weren't we better though?
What are you asking?
Ryan, come on. We were better. I'm sure we were better.
I have to be an impartial judge here. I can't pick a favorite. Okay. I'm sorry. I love you both equally. Okay. Both my favorite children.
Oh, wow. Okay. This is getting
Is that
awkward.
Like a Sophie's Choice thing, or what is that?
The horse.
The horse.
Yeah.
Of course, everybody, if you want to follow the show.
Go ahead.
I'm doing keep my talking. Plugs, Jeff.
Keep
Come on.
Talking. Okay.
So, all the back episodes of our show are on our website, brianwaterpodcast.com. You can subscribe to the show on any podcatcher of your choice. We're always talking MASH over on Twitter at MASH477Cast. If you want to support the Fire and Water Podcast Network, go to patreon.com/FW podcast, and there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So a big salute to Daniel Ulrich, Nicholas Prom, Russell Burbage, Stan Peel, Britt Schramm, Mike Thomas, Michael Porter, Joe Perino, and Billy Shulman for their support of MASHcast. And I got to do a special shout out to the crazy kids over on Tumblr at the MASH Blur kind of thing out there. There is a huge community of young kids that love MASH. And they show it on Tumblr. And this was not anything I knew existed until just a couple of weeks ago. And now I love it. They love this show in ways I never would have expected. And it is absolutely delightful. They are a great bunch of folks. So I just want to throw a shout out there to everybody over on Tumblr who love MASH, because it's a great little community. So that's going to do it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We will see you next week. But until then, that is all.
Never fails, right, Igor? You make a guy an officer and he turns into a fink.
Ain't it the way?
Does he remember when you lent him that O'Henry bar for the movies?
Uh-uh.
Does he remember all that good garbage you gave him for his hamster?
Beats me.
Exactly.
Come on, Zeal. Just because a guy makes officer doesn't mean you gotta walk all over him.